I'm Steve Hitchcock, and as some of you may know, I work for a fundraising firm in Berkeley, California, which is similar to working for an advertising agency. And I've been here for 2 weeks talking about issues of ministry and daily life, how our faith, what resources we have in our Christian faith for ministry in everyday life situations. And I've brought along copies of New Ministries, an effort that I've been associated with for about the last 8 or 9 years. And I'll pass those around in case there's someone here who hasn't gotten a copy. And if you'd like to continue receiving the newsletter without any obligation at all, just put your name and address on the pad of paper that I'll pass around. And if any of you are really curious about the state of fundraising today in the United States, if you have a personality disorder or something, or you're wondering how to avoid being asked for money, I brought a few copies of our corporate newsletter along. The topic is, why is there never enough time? And I want to talk with you today about two dimensions of time. Time as illusion and time as treasure. And one of the reasons that I enjoy working with adults here at Holden is that it's a time for us to step back and examine our own lives, to get some perspective on that, but also to get some perspective in a larger context of what's happening in our society, both economic and demographic trends, to get a bigger picture. And then finally, it's a time to get some perspective on our faith, the connection between our faith and what's happening in the world. So time is one of those places where I think faith and life intersect, sometimes painfully and sometimes joyfully. And what I want to do is talk with you literally about our experience of time. What I'd like to do is start off with a little exercise, if you will, to help us start thinking about that. What I'd like you to do is list for me some experiences or situations when there is plenty of time, when there just seems to be scads of time. Time is like a leisurely day. You feel there's no time pressure at all. And then I'd like you to also tell me when there's not enough time. And there's no, you don't have to give them to me in any order. There aren't any right answers. Just let's list some of those experiences.
There's never enough time on Sunday night.
Okay. Why did they invent Sunday nights? I guess because of Monday morning. What else? What else? Yes?
I never have enough time to clean my house.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't do this anymore, but when I used to live in the city, I felt like I had enough time when I was taking the bus.
Okay.
While I was on the bus was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Can't read all the books that are written.
Okay.
Not enough time to read.
Or go to the plays or the activities you want to act in.
All those good cultural activities that you should go to.
I'll enjoy going to.
Yeah, I enjoy going to. Excuse me. When is it? When is time? Lots of time, and when there isn't enough time. Yeah.
About the fourth day of vacation, there's enough time for a couple of days.
Fourth day of vacation.
Started with.
There's too much time, and you have to wait in the doctor's office for
waiting. Just waiting.
Waiting.
Yes.
That's too much time.
There's enough or too much time when you're not prepared to use it.
Okay.
I was taking a magazine along to the doctor's office.
Oh, okay.
We're starting a third category.
Yeah. Yes.
That's fine. You see, it doesn't faze me. It doesn't fit into my too far. Okay.
There's not enough time in the deadlines.
Okay, deadline.
That would include any time you're trying to go somewhere at a certain time with young children. Just before it's time to leave. Okay. That way. It's a time warp that happens. Okay. Time moves faster just before it's time to leave.
Enough time when I'm at my parents' house.
Ah, yes.
No, I didn't mean there was too much. There's enough time in Poland.
Why is there enough time at your parents' house?
Why?
Yeah, or what about that experience?
There's plenty of time.
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Holden.
There's enough time in Holden?
Yeah. Okay. Other side, too.
Yes.
Yeah, on
the other
side,
you gotta put there's never enough time.
When there's two things you want to do at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
There's enough time when you're suddenly left alone. You don't want
it. When Joe takes Saturday and Sunday, there's not enough time.
When there's a blizzard, there's
enough time. Pardon?
When there's a blizzard.
Oh.
That's
another
not enough time.
Just before you're ready to go to bed, you have just enough time to unwind.
Okay.
Just before you go to sleep. There's enough time when you set it aside.
Ah. Mm-hmm. I should. Yeah. The right words down. Any other? Not enough time?
There's enough time for me when I can get away from the phone and from the television.
I was going to say, maybe when you get sick, there's not time enough. But that's usually telling me something.
Yes.
About my use of time.
Yeah, because you get sick. Like, I got sick just before I came here, and I had to come 2 weeks later than I planned.
Uh-huh.
So there was too much time,
yeah.
It was a conflict, because I didn't want to take time to be sick.
Okay.
I had to.
You had to take time, okay.
Yeah, that's at the point where you have too many things to do and too little time to do them.
Okay.
Circus next door.
Gentle touch.
There's not enough time when people expect too many things.
We expect too many things from ourselves, too.
But for me, it's significant that other people expect things from us.
Yes. I've done this in lots of work situations, which is very, very interesting to do. And I've worked with lots of clerical or administrative staffs. And just to add to the list, what is always so striking to me is there's always enough time when the boss is away on a business trip. And there's never enough time when the boss has just returned from a business trip.
You could add it's lunch hours, is that right side too? Doesn't ever seem to be enough time on the lunch hour.
The point of all of this is that the time on both sides of these equations is still 60 minutes per hour, 24 hours a day. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to have you back. The time is really the same, but somehow we experience it as fundamentally different. What are some of the things that are happening on this side as opposed to this side? Why is time different over here than here?
Leisurely.
It's leisurely? Yes.
We're enjoying it.
Enjoying it?
Or we have overestimated the amount of things that we can put into a certain period of time.
Okay.
One of the things I've noticed about when I have enough time is that something has been bracketed out.
Mm-hmm.
So that my normal pattern is somehow broken.
Mm-hmm.
Things on the right seem like they are a lot of action things or doing things. And others are not quite like that.
Okay. Activity and activity.
Yeah. Or they have goals.
Yeah.
There's some goal oriented?
Yeah, some end in mind.
One of the things that I think here is that one of the big differences is who's controlling the time. When there's not enough time, look at how many of these things someone else has control over my time. It's not that when you're in the lunch hour feels fine. It's that the lunch hour comes to an end because somebody else says the lunch hour is over.
Would you say the one side's stressful and the other one not?
I don't know. What do you think?
Certainly more stressful.
Right. Certainly on this side, when there's not enough time, the experience is anxiety, frustration, stress, if you will. Over here, why are some of these other... We're in control of the time. What else is here?
Sometimes we don't know what to do with the time or how to use it.
Pardon?
Sometimes we don't know what to do with that time.
We don't know what to do with it.
And I'm not sure I agree that we're in control of all this. So I think of like
no, we're not.
A blizzard, sickness, love to know. I still think that point about breaking the usual routine is a forced.
Right. In fact, I just did this recently. I had to do something in the cities, and for some reason, I took the bus instead of driving in the city. And I thought the reason it wasn't that it felt like enough time is because I wasn't in control.
Right.
I get on the bus, stay on the bus until I get where I'm going, and it's not my responsibility anymore. As long as I'm on the bus, it's somebody else's job.
Right. There's a paradox or a contrary here where sometimes when we feel we have enough time, we've chosen to spend the time that way, and therefore it feels like there's enough time. We're in control. Paradoxically, when control is taken out of our hands, I mean, I don't know if Deanna's thinking about the same thing as I am, but when I'm at my parents', I don't have any responsibility at all. I'm semi-waited upon.
That's right.
You know, so there is that paradox. I do think that what happens is that it not only is the routine broken, but some of those controlling factors that give us a sense of time pressure are also broken. Anything else about this experience of time in these two?
The things on the left are kind of isolated type times. I guess it's the same thing,
yeah.
But they're like little boxes, like here's life, and then there's this little box where I only concentrate on two or three things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I step out of that box and all the other things happen to me.
Right.
And they might even have been stacking up while I'm in this little box.
Uh-huh. There is that sense, some people even describe them as oases. They feel like they are these islands of tranquility. Yes, please.
For me, I would verify for me that when there are too many expectations for my performance in a time frame, that for me is very stressful. And
mm-hmm.
It's just like, whereas I see Holden, the number of expectations on me, Holden, are way reduced. And again, it has to do with other people's expectations. I work with kids in school, and there are almost always too many, too many expectations, too many things going on. Only one of me and more, always, of others that I'm serving. And that is, it feels like, it's very stressful.
Yes. Yeah. I think partly that's, I'm not an expert, but I've read enough of management studies to show it may even be physiological, because the tests that have been done on the number of items that people can remember are tasks, and at 7, people just lose it all. And so there is that sense that it's out of my control because there's more things than I can remember to do.
Right. Overstimulus.
Right.
I heard her saying that. Yeah. So many things going on, and when it's simplified, it's easier.
Right. One of the things that in marketing, if you want people to hurry up, is you create lots of visual clutter. That's why the fast food restaurants feel so cluttered and the colors are so bright. There's so much stimulation in the most fast food restaurants so that you will eat quickly and get out of there so that the next person can quickly go in there. Yes?
There's an expression that's been around work for years that there's never enough time to do something right, but there's always enough time to do it over.
Yes.
On the one hand, the criteria is getting something done or meeting a deadline or something, and time is the most important thing. But when you decide to do something right, well, then you take the time that it takes to do it. You don't necessarily have to finish it at a certain deadline.
It's a very good point, because there's also two different experiences of time in those situations. Some of the studies that have been done of people who do things right, which is very similar to some of the positive experiences of time we have, is that time stops. I mean, have you ever done an activity and you've been involved in it and you look up and you say, my goodness, I've been at this for 3 hours. It seemed like just a few minutes ago. I think that's what happens when we start to go to sleep. What happens is that literally time disappears for us. It becomes suspended. Athletes will talk about this sweet spot where you are so wrapped up, you've lost any sense of time or whatever. It just stops. Reality slows down and you lose all sense of time. Yes?
Oh, I was just going to say that one of the guests who was up here last week was talking about going mountain climbing, and
yes,
how for him that was, he didn't talk about it in terms of time, but in terms of being relaxed, that was really relaxing to him because he had to concentrate only on that, couldn't think about anything else. I said, I can do that when I'm doing cross stitch. I don't fall down the mountain, but it's that concentration on one thing that can make the time feel expansive.
Right. Which goes back to the point, I don't know your name, but that you were making, is that you can't ever concentrate on any one thing because you've got 10 million things going on. There have been several studies of what managers do, and of time studies, and most managers never do anything more than 9 to 15 minutes long. That everything is broken up into 9 to 15 minute segments, except for meetings, which seem to go on interminably. Some of those of you that are in offices, think about it. I mean, whether you're a clerical, administrative, or managed position, you start and you spend very little bits of time. Well,
if our ability to set priorities has anything to do with how we see time, if we're better at setting priorities, then it may seem like we have enough time. I don't know.
Most of the literature about people who are highly productive, there are either two types of people. Those people who can, who's the Winchester on, I do one thing and I do it well and then I go on and I do the next thing. People who can sequence and concentrate can be very productive. There also seem to be other people who can paradoxically hold all that other stuff and let it be in abeyance, if you will, and still do something else at the same time. Unfortunately, there are, most of us don't have that skill to keep all that stuff.
Usually, if they want jobs done, they say give it to the busiest person because they'll get it done.
Yes.
And that sort of contradiction.
It's a curious thing, though, that some people work well under pressure and some do not. You know, my daughter, for example, says I'm far more productive when I'm under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I like to be under pressure. And others simply fall apart and say, that's an intolerable situation.
Yeah, we all have different experiences of time.
Yeah,
I guess that's one
of
the...
Yeah, I don't know that we can just make it so as simplified that is that we have our own styles. And when we are in touch with our own style,
mm-hmm.
then it seems that we can become productive because we know what we can do that triggers that productivity.
Right. I think that that's part of how time can be a treasure. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. Yeah.
That's a little related to the type of person who really enjoys newspaper work. The constant pressure, you know, living there right on the edge, somewhat related to the person who enjoys like mountain climbing. I mean, I'm talking about grade 6 rock climbing or something like that. That's really dangerous. At that time, they say they're only then do they really feel fully alive. And for somebody else, that's too much pressure. That type of personality is so different from what they are. They can't handle it. They need the ability to take one thing slowly at a time. So everybody is different in their abilities to handle it.
Yeah, the word I've used is that time is elastic, that it stretches and contracts to fit different circumstances. And for somebody, rock climbing, that's where time stretches out. And for others, it's actually under pressure because they feel like they're in the middle of the tornado where it's calm. People who often don't work under pressure have that sense of calmness about it. Partly, I think they're especially with Deanne here, I said, we are historical creatures. And I didn't find Daniel Bernstein's Discoverers. The whole first part of the book is about the creation of time. Think about how recently it is that we have clocks, or even in digital, where we have broken time in not to a spatial, but actually to a sequential numbering system. And it's been only within the last 10 years that I didn't bring my day timers, but that most of us in administrative or management positions have our lives dictated literally by day timer type calendars. Everyone carries a diary around or whatever one wants to call it. Before the invention of time, how was time kept?
Sun.
By the sun. Sun's not very precise. Literally, time was elastic. And in the book, The Discoverers, they talk about all of the things that clockmakers did to account for the elasticity of time. We have clocks to do it.
You know, the other thing that makes me think of right away, Steve, is on an academic calendar, there's a real rhythm. And St. Olaf's Christmas Festival is a big deal. It comes right by finals.
Mm-hmm.
And that 2 weeks around Christmas Festival is when you have weeping students in your office because they don't have enough time, they're overworked. You know, in October, they've got tons of time.
Yes.
But in December,
yes.
No time.
Right.
And it has to do not just with the hours of the day, but the way the rhythm of the work goes together.
Right. That may not have been the case of pre-modern persons because literally there was more time when you needed to harvest. Now there is always less time. And certainly when you were working on lunar and sun sense of time, it's much different. The second reason, though, that time is an illusion, I think, is that it's elusive. It seems to run away from us, to always be out ahead of us. It's fascinating study. I don't know if any of you, it's I'll even admit it, it's from Newsweek last May. And it talks about rediscovering the rat race. It's some of the stuff that we talked about last week about baby boomers and their sense of time and their sense of being part of the rat race. You may have heard about the Harris poll that they interviewed people. They interviewed people about their sense of how busy they were. The Harris poll reports that since 1973, leisure time has declined 37% from 26 hours a week to only 16 hours a week, while the work week has increased 15%.
Since when?
Since 1973.
When was that poll taken?
Pardon? It was taken in just this year. Let me just see when it is. It's cited in this book. I think it's a 1987 Lou Harris poll. And it even talks about, there's here. The average American has 18 hours of leisure each week, 8 hours less than 10 years ago.
What do they mean by leisure time? Is that discretionary time?
Yes, discretionary time apart from, and you discount sleeping, eating, pardon?
Church commitments,
works.
Any times right. That you have commitment.
Right. Yeah. And people in the Lou Harris poll from 30 to 49, which includes many of us in this room, have only 16 hours of leisure time. And let's see if there's anything else that's interesting here. Well, that's the Lou Harris poll. It got a lot of, not only Newsweek, but Wall Street Journal and lots of other cases. Samuelson contends that that is what he calls a psychofact, that people feel it, therefore it must be reality. Here's reality. On the one hand, we have our perception of time. On the other hand, indeed, the tip-off that the Harris poll is unreliable comes from the elderly. Though few of them hold jobs, and he cites the dramatic number of retired persons. To me, it was fascinating. In 1947, nearly half of men over 65 worked. Today, only 15% of men over 65 work. So then he says, though few of the elderly hold jobs, they recorded the largest drop in leisure in the latest Lou Harris survey. They say they have only about an hour more of daily leisure than average working Americans.
May I say something?
Yes.
When you get older, your two-hour jobs last all day. Not just physically, but mentally.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's so difficult to accept.
Yes.
Time does change with age, like as a child, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's never going to come.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you find it, I work a lot with elderly people,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of their complaints.
Yes.
Is that they're the jobs they like to do, the things they like to do, just take too long to do them now.
Right. Our
it's
whole
not that they're infirm. It's
no.
Just the way your mechanism slows down.
Right. Yeah.
Well, a lot of them do volunteering, and pretty soon they find they're working longer at volunteering.
They're working harder as volunteers.
Tell me about it. 12 hours a week I put in.
Well, let's see what's really happened in American society. One of my contentions has been, in talking to people 2 weeks, is that we have a responsibility, as Walt would say, to be obedient to the world and to test reality, to find out what reality is. Since 1965, sleeping time, about 8 hours, and eating time, an hour and a third. No wonder we feel hectic. We only spend an hour. Then somebody reminded me, that's about all the time we spend at Holden eating. that doesn't count the ice cream, I guess. Free time. Everything excluding work, sleep, eating, shopping, housework, and child work is up about 10% to 5.5 hours a day. This is in the John Robinson University of Maryland study. Interestingly, two-fifths of that time, free time, is spent watching television. Since 1965, men's weekly hours have decreased from 49 to 42. Women's working hours have decreased from 39 hours to 31 hours.
That's paid working time.
That's actual time spent working. Robinson speculates, and this I can corroborate this from the firm that I work with, that the decline reflects informal ways that employers accommodate family pressures by allowing flexible startup times, absences for doctor's appointments, or early departure time. Well,
Steve?
Yeah, please.
I don't know, maybe you remember the name of the book. Kushner has it in his book on whenever, when all you wanted wasn't enough.
Right.
About the people discovered the reason they didn't have enough time, it was because the government was secretly taxing their time, since time is money. secretly taking away 15 minutes here or a half hour there or something. Yeah. I don't remember what the name of what he mentioned the name of the book, I think.
That, I think that points to a fact. What Samuelson and Robinson are trying to say is that theoretically we should have more free time. That we are working fewer hours, there are more of us who are not working, but yet our experience is, and the Lou Harris poll shows that Americans perceive themselves to have less and less time than ever before. Why is that?
Break down depending on what kind of employment people have?
I'm sure it does.
Yeah. Because one of my colleagues says the definition of an academic is someone who is always on the verge of having an infinite amount of free time.
Yes.
You know, but if you have a real 40-hour-a-week job that really doesn't follow you home, there must be such people who have such jobs. Like when I used to work in a bakery,
mm-hmm.
I would go in, I'd do my work, and I'd come home.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't have the same psychological effect of occupying all your time.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
So that if I had that kind of job, I would feel like I had more time.
Right.
Because you're leaving the work at work.
Right. Yeah.
So one of the reasons, and we'll talk about this again tomorrow, one of the reasons is that there aren't people that are baking. More and more Americans work where?
Service sector.
Service or
professional.
So they work in offices. And the statistics are pretty startling about the move from places like farms. Think about having lots of time on farms.
Yeah.
Bakeries, etc. So people are working in offices where time itself is one of the measures. What else is true about us?
We're goal-oriented.
We're goal-oriented? Why else do we feel today that, yes?
The number of social or service volunteer organizations to which Americans belong.
Right.
What the amount of stimulation in our environment?
I wonder also if the fact that we're two, you know, instead of a husband only working, it's a two-person. But that means that when they get home, both members of the union feel that they have additional work at home to do, whether it be with children or housework.
Right.
Well, and the other piece that happens with that is that an other way of dividing things is I do these things and you do those things. But like in our marriage where we try and both do everything,
yes.
It means that you're doing twice as much stuff for half as long.
Right. And there are some interesting studies about the amount of housework.
And the other flip side of that is for the single parent family.
Right.
That person is doing two full jobs by then.
Right.
When you have two persons working jobs within a family, assuming that the two married adults, the free time of one person often overlaps into the working time of another. That's right. Yeah. So you have less. One person's got 3 weeks vacation, the other one's got two. So basically that third week gets lost.
Right.
One of the things that's happening that we feel in our families and we feel in our offices and we feel in our societies at large is the disorganization, the destructuring, the decentralization. Deanne from Die from there said, well, I work at Holden and nobody checks up on my work. I used to be in a place where there was always bosses. Well, when Deanne goes out and becomes a professional or her next job, but the majority of chances are she's going to start working in an environment where there are fewer and fewer bosses, where the lines between boss and worker are blurring. And the interesting way in which Samuelson talks about it with regard to families and why families feel they have less time is here. Of course, there are real and upsetting changes, but they only indirectly involve time. Part of today's sense of squeeze, time squeeze, stems from the breakdown of traditional sex roles. Moms have jobs and dads do housework. People have blurred responsibilities, and naturally, there isn't enough time to do everything. Choices have to be made. One of the things about hierarchy and about structure and about tradition is it obviates or gets rid of the need to make choices. Choices have to be made, and making them is stressful. Remember, one of the things you said about this is that it is stress on this side. And so we are experiencing stress, and one of the ways in which we interpret that stress is that we don't have enough time, when in fact it may not be at all related to time.
So, again,
yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time negotiating and trying to figure out how to coordinate? I mean, do you waste a lot of time that way?
I think what Robinson is saying and what I experience in our family is that the sense of anxiety that comes from that lack of clear decision making creates an emotional state that it feels similar to a sense of time squeeze.
So it sounds like we keep saying two sort of contrary things, but that are both true.
Right.
One, if you have control of your time, you feel like you have enough. And if you don't have control of your time, because somebody else does, you sometimes feel like you have enough, which makes sense to me because I find that when I feel like I don't have enough time, instead of doing what I'm supposed to do, I go to a movie. And then I come home and I can do what I need to get done.
Right. And I think movies are, at least for me personally, are one of the places where time stops.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Unless the movie is bad. Then you're always looking. No, but seriously, if you get caught up in it, let me just say, I think there's one other thing, though, that makes time elusive, that makes it seem to go faster in addition to, and it's the three F's. I guess it's four.
We'll count for you.
Facts, FedEx, and fast food. I guess that's four.
Yeah.
Four.
Which represent, to me anyway, the way in which Americans choose to do things. Now, if you've used any of these, and I use them every day almost in my business, you come to the realization every once in a while that they do not make things happen faster. But they certainly make you feel, again, as though you're moving faster.
They're just giving you decisions. You're having to make decisions sooner because things are arriving sooner on the facts.
Oh, sure.
Or
yeah.
They let you wait longer. I mean, that's what I see, is that you wait, because you can Federal Express it, so I don't have to get it done a week ahead, I can
right.
get it done a day ahead. So consequently, you worry about it for a week longer.
Yeah.
It becomes a shell game, I guess, is the point I'm making. But that it does, those things do seem to set the pace and to literally make the clock tick faster.
Is there also a place in here where, as families, we have become so isolated and independent or whatever, and there often lacks a real sense of community in a neighborhood, that we actually have more to do as an individual family, that we aren't
relying on one another to do some of the, I don't know how this fits in or if it even does, but.
I don't have any change, or I'd give you some. Yes, that's exactly the point. It's time to switch to time as treasure.
There's
two experiences of time as treasure. Let me just, have you ever had a meeting canceled?
Mm-hmm. Found time.
And it's just that tremendous sense that here this gift has been given to you. Pardon?
Christmas in July.
Christmas in July.
I didn't have to work as much.
For some people. Okay. The other sense for me, that when you started to talk, it just dawned on me from Witness, the movie Witness. You can see I go to a movie. When they build the barn, that tremendous sense of community that to me just seemed to create time, probably both literally and emotionally, because everybody was cooperating together. Are there some other times that where time feels like a gift or a treasure?
Blizzard, school canceled.
Blizzard.
Oh,
we talked about that before.
Unless you're the parent with
the Minnesota. Yeah, it doesn't happen very often.
Somebody cancels a visit.
Okay.
So one social event turns into a real gift.
When you're in a place like Holden, or when you're using your every hour to the maximum.
Okay.
When you're on a really productive schedule where you're benefiting, and you know the whole day is totally utilized.
Yeah.
When you can turn off the alarm and go back to sleep. That hour when you've been awake, and then you go back to sleep.
It drives Jan crazy, but my system is that I'll put the alarm a half an hour early, and then the clock has a second, and then you turn it, and then you sleep for another half hour. Mm-hmm. Somehow it helps me to start the day with that gift of a half an hour. But some days I wish it were more. Yeah.
Sometimes when you're sick and you stay home from work, you may get behind at work, but you're not so sick that you can't do things at home when you catch up on the writing letters.
Playing hooky.
Yeah. What's the other place where time, are there other places where time feels like a gift? One of the
I can't help but think, you know, if you've gone through when you've gone through a serious illness, and you know, and at first it was terminal, and you suddenly realize, hey, the cancer has been contained, and I now have some additional time to live.
Yeah.
When you fall in love.
Ah.
Finishing a big job at work when you work a lot of overtime on something, but then it's a great success, then somehow the time is, it's okay. It's, you're rewarded.
The other thing that's related to this, and that triggered me when you started to speak, was the sense of a dinner party with close friends. Somehow friendship, not only does time stop, but it seems like it's a gift that those friends bring to you. It's nothing, I always had this experience of trying to clean the stupid house, get all the food ready, and then you're there and you realize that none of that makes any difference anyway. It's that those friends are there. I guess the closest thing to unconditional experience that we have. Other experiences of the
sometimes seeing yourself in doing something that you enjoy.
Okay.
Sometimes worship.
Yes.
Or enjoying the time with your kids, even if it's one at a time.
Usually it's one at a time.
That's all I think.
What's our experience, Jen, when we're home alone with Nathan?
It's a lot quieter.
Yeah, it's a lot. But just having one child feels so much different. And it's almost always happens accidentally, unintentionally. And you've got one child who that relationship changes so much. Yes, Sandy.
I was going to say, like, when the people that I live with, if they disappear for a weekend, and I've got all this, you know, I can get so much done, and it's like, oh, good.
Okay. I guess you're alone then. Unexpected.
Solitude. Get a sanctuary, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Also, those situations where you know you should be doing this, you know you should be doing that, and it's your day off, and you say, I'm going to make this decision, and I'm going to use the time the way I please, and for once, you don't beat yourself about wasting the time. Really enjoy it.
Okay.
Please.
That's what I feel like.
I call a lot of these things like joy moments that you create for yourself. For instance, like sitting and enjoying the flowers. Or
I don't suppose you read Glamour magazine, but they always have in there one of these.
I could tell that you do it.
Yeah. Well, it's that sort of thing when you go, I'm not going to work tonight.
Yeah.
I'm in the grocery store, I buy it. And yes. They, every month they have a little thing about, I don't remember what it's called,
what
time for yourself.
Right. Yeah, what to do
that
for
are
yourself.
These kinds of things.
What I'd like to do is push it, to take it one step further, though. And there's never enough time when there's a whiteboard, I guess. Well, the way in which I've been forced to think about this is to see that when time becomes a gift, it's a gift of faith. Whether it's faith in that love, whether it's faith in that friendship that's operative, but for those of us who are Christians, that it's grounded in a prior experience of faith. And when you started talking about community, I think that's why community and worship are so important, at least in my life. Because in that Christian community, we get an identity, we get a role, we get a future. All of those things that we talked about earlier that create that sense of anxiety that make time seem like it's not enough. The other thing that I feel that we experience in Christian community is this connection with eternity. I continue to be changed when we talk about being connected with the saints and martyrs of the past, in that sense of seeing small children baptized in church, that sense of being part of a bigger part of time. One of the things that I experience, at least in my daily life, when I feel there isn't enough time, is that it is only that day that seems to exist. And everything has to get done in that day. And if it doesn't get done today, it's a great tragedy. The world is going to fall apart. That's not what I experience in Christian community. There's also a sense in which, when you talked about waiting, I think that's what the Christian faith is about. This sense, everything has already happened. Jesus has died and been raised, but it's not yet finished. It's that paradox, it's that contrary to me that changes the way I perceive time.
Well, I guess I just had a moment here. Thinking of the past, present, and future all can be at one point.
Yes.
I mean,
right.
That collective consciousness, you're in touch with everything it was and everything it is going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think again, what happens is that time disappears; it becomes suspended, and that, for me, happens in worship. It happens in Christian community, whether that community is around a dinner table or here at Holden. Well, again,
they're finished early.
Let's take just a few more minutes.
We have more time.
We have more time. The other way that I've been challenged this week to think about time is time as falling. And much of what Jeff and Carol have talked about has been around Luther's sense of vocation, some of which I confess to not understanding, but that's what pastors talk about. The way in which it's become meaningful for me is that there's a focal point for our life. As I read those Luther passages, Luther says, it's all right to concentrate. You don't have to do everything. It's all right to focus your skills and your abilities on that place and that time. That's what God gives you to do. And for me, that's helpful. I think that has help in setting priorities. In my business, I work with a lot of young, very bright people, and it is always amazing to me, and Jan is sick of hearing about this at the dinner table. These young, creative people are always so overworked, and invariably, they're the people that come in at 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning, because they are so overworked. I think part of it is that they haven't learned yet, or they're developing that ability to set priorities so that during the day they experience everything all at once. The other part of calling or vocation, I think, is the issue of stewardship. Again, because time is a gift, it's something that we manage, that we're stewards of. We take care of it. And the two parts of that that again, at Holden that I've experienced, is part of our stewardship is taking care of our bodies. And one of the things that goes back to the issue of stress destroys most human bodies. There are very few people that can operate under stress for long periods of time without having a deleterious or a negative impact on their bodies. So I think that gives us permission to use time and experience time in a different way.
You certainly look at it in different perspective when that does happen.
How?
Illness.
Illness, yes.
You work so hard or you're so busy that all the pressure just breaks you down, and once you're down, you just look at it differently. Time.
When you said illness, I see sickness, not always, but often, as God's way of saying, I'm taking back, I'm in charge of your time, and you're going to be sick. And that's a pretty strong message.
Comment on your lifestyle. My lifestyle.
The other thing that I've experienced about time is that when we try to accelerate it, the four F's, most of those are very destructive of the environment. Certainly fast food is. Many of the other times that we drive very fast from place to place. Again, it's a very subtle thing, but I think that's part of our stewardship. And finally, I think that as I read Luther, he's also talking about the sense of craft, that we do things well. Go back to this point about there's always time to do things the right way. What's the wrong way to say the same? What's the saying?
There's never enough time to do it right, and always enough time to do it over.
There's enough time. That the Christian, that in Luther says, we are called to do it well. We're not just called to do it, but to do it as well as we can do it. And I think that gives us permission to be craftspersons, to do it with the kind of attention to detail, the kind of care, the kind of completeness and thoroughness. And again, what we've talked about is when we start to do that again, time disappears. That time becomes a gift when you're caught up in the very process of doing things well. Well, we've run out of time. It's time for worship. It's been fun to talk with you. And see some of you tomorrow morning, I believe it is. Yes. And we'll talk about the changing nature of the workplace. And I want to talk about some of the forces that have changed the way in which we work. Thank you very much. Thank you.